What does it mean to inwardly digest God's Word? Find out in Pastor Will Wheaton's column in the latest Issues Etc. journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Dr. John Warwick Montgomery tells his story of finding confessional Lutheranism to be the most scripturally faithful theology. The free online Issues Etc. journal, issuesetc.org. The future of higher education does not look very bright right now. There was a time, perhaps 30, 40, 50 years ago, when everything was looking up, everyone was going to college. Well, college is not as popular as it used to be, and the sheer reality of the demographics tell us that the babies that are going to be sitting in those college classrooms in 18, 20 years were never born. So the future of higher education looks bad. Some would say it's in free fall as we speak. And this affects not only secular universities, state universities, but also small religious colleges as well. They're feeling the financial pinch. Welcome back to Issues Etc. Joining us to discuss the financial viability of Concordia University Ann Arbor, Mark Stern. He's an attorney in Chicago. He has served on committees for university education for two conventions of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. He's former chairman of the Board of Regents at Concordia University Chicago and author of a series of columns titled Concordia Ann Arbor, A Response. Mark, welcome back.
Thank you, Pastor Walken.
What is the Concordia University system?
That is a good question. Someone once said about the Holy Roman Empire that it was neither holy nor Roman nor an empire. There are some aspects of that that may translate to the Concordia University system. It is not the parent entity of the Concordia universities. What it is a board that Synod created in 1992 to assist with coordinating some of the issues regarding finances and operations of the universities. Originally, they took over some of the responsibilities of the old Board for Higher Education, so they had to approve certain campus capital plans. They had a role in the selection of the presidents and the presidential searches and a few other things, but mostly their power was persuasive rather than coercive because the institutions were governed by the Board of Regents. So at the 2023 convention, there were some changes made, and the system is now focused primarily on Lutheran mission and identity and has stepped back from some of the financial and oversight roles that they previously had.
How many Concordia universities are currently in service now, and why have three universities closed in the last several years?
There are currently five Concordia universities that exist that are subscribing to Synod authority, which is Irvine, St. Paul, Seward, River Forest, and of course, Mequon, Ann Arbor. Texas is in litigation with the Synod right now, and then Concordia College, Alabama, Concordia College, New York, and Concordia University, Portland, have all closed within the last few years.
What were the reasons for those closures?
Well, they're all somewhat different and somewhat similar. Their money, of course, is a factor in all of them. Concordia College, Selma, was a historically black college that was founded by the Synod, well, that was founded and taken over by the Synod in the early 20th century to provide education in the Black Belt area of Alabama. They never had a very large operation or a very substantial financial base. A lot of money was put in by the Synod in the last few years of their operation to attempt to keep them afloat, but they were not economically viable due to their size and due to the fact that they were in somewhat of an economically depressed area and had limited resources. Concordia University Portland was a very different situation. They also failed for lack of money, but they had aggressively expanded in their graduate and online programs with a vendor called Hot Chalk, which was a promoter of online graduate education. But unfortunately, they were ultimately became insolvent because their growth trajectory did not meet what they needed to do to keep up with their contract. They're currently in the middle of a litigation for over $300 million, which has been dismissed a couple times, but is still hanging around. They closed for that reason. Concordia College, New York, was in Bronxville. They were a relatively small college operating in a high-cost area. They had attempted to expand, but I guess were not able to expand to the point of getting economies of scale. And so they closed as well. There was not an insolvency situation, but they simply determined that they were not able to continue in a manner that was viable. And their board made the decision to close them down. So ultimately, all of them were financial issues.
Concordia Ann Arbor was once a freestanding institution. How did it come under Concordia University, Wisconsin?
In the later part of the 2000s, Concordia Ann Arbor, which started out as a junior college two-year program, became a four-year program, I think, in the late 1970s or early 80s, and then ultimately became a university. They were one of the smaller Concordias, and they ran into financial difficulty in the later 2000s and early 2010s, and they were on the verge of closing. Concordia University, Wisconsin, came in and worked with them, and the institutions ultimately merged around 2012-2013 to become one institution, which is Concordia University, Wisconsin, Ann Arbor. So essentially it was a merger or takeover where Concordia University, Wisconsin became responsible for the Ann Arbor campus, and Concordia University, Ann Arbor ceased in 2014 to exist as a separate legal entity. And since that time, CUW has been CUWAA and has been operating the campus.
Tell us about February's announcement by President Eric Ankerberg regarding Ann Arbor's financial situation.
So on February 13th, Dr. Ankerberg sent out an email to faculty, staff, and students at the two campuses in Mequon and Ann Arbor, which stated, quote, "We must reduce our cost substantially to operate sustainably within existing revenues." And he stated that the Ann Arbor campus faces a structural deficit large enough that it cannot be overcome without a significant change to the strategic model of how we operate. That email and some of the information in it was read by many as suggesting that there was going to be an immediate closure or substantial closure of the Ann Arbor campus. That then created a lot of angst, as one would imagine it would. And folks up in Ann Arbor, alumni and faculty and staff, organized a Facebook group and a PR campaign to challenge what they perceived as the decision. Actually, no decision was directly taken at that point. What Dr. Ankerberg said was that options were going to be presented to the Board of Regents, and the board was going to make a decision. And that subsequently happened February 29th and was announced March 1st by a video from the board chairman, Reverend John Berg.
How would you describe the largely misinformed reaction to Ankerberg's first announcement?
I think a lot of people had emotional reactions, which is understandable. Some of the financial responses, though, I don't think were fully informed in terms of what was going on. So one of the things that was said is, well, we have record enrollment, and therefore we are doing great. So record enrollment is good if it is producing revenues to operate the program. So, you know, it's like the old joke, what we lose on each sale, we make up on volume. Well, you can't do that. You have to be able to pay the faculty and staff that are teaching the students. You have to be able to maintain the buildings. And to do that, you do need a revenue stream, whether that comes from tuition, whether that comes from gifts, whether that comes from what they call ancillary revenue, which is essentially dorm rent in the space, food and beverage, bookstore, anything of that nature would be ancillary revenue. So simply saying we have a lot of students doesn't answer the question of, do we have enough money to pay for our operations? Another thing that was said was that Mequon, Concordia University Ann Arbor, Wisconsin Ann Arbor has an endowment of $125 million. And therefore, if they, quote unquote, only have a shortfall of $9.1 million, which is a number that was cited by Dr. Ankerberg, why don't we just take that out of the endowment? Isn't that what it's for? That's not the way endowments work for colleges and universities. What you do is you get gifts and contributions and attempt to build up an endowment, which is then used to generate an annual stream of income. So the analogy I would use is like an IRA or a 401k, where you save up money throughout your life, and you don't then take the money out all at once or in big chunks. You plan for an income stream that's going to sustain you during retirement. So if you were to take out 10% of your unrestricted endowment, which is what would have had to happen to cover this deficit, it will impact your income stream down the road and you will run out of money. And it's also going to make people more hesitant to contribute because that is viewed as a warning sign of potential danger for the financial health of the university. Another issue is disputes in terms of what is the appropriate way to measure the quote-unquote profitability of the university. One approach is to look at the overall financial statements of the university. Those take into account things such as your growth and your endowment investments. Another way would be to look at your income statement, which is sort of your checkbook balance. And a third way would be to look at the Form 990 tax returns, which the universities file with the IRS every year. Those three measures tell very different stories because they measure very different things. So your financial statements, consider if you were to do a personal financial statement, if your house goes up in value by 10% from one year to the next, you appear to be 10% wealthier. But that isn't cash that you can spend. I mean, yeah, you can take out a home equity loan, but that's not liquid. It's not money you can use to pay your grocery bill. You can look at your checkbook balance. How much money do I have in my account every month? You presumably don't want to get down to zero before the end of the month and be waiting for your next payday. That's a concern. And lastly, and this is something that has not been pointed out too much, the tax returns for the university show a very interesting story, somewhat different from what many people are stating. If I could get into this for a little bit, Pastor Wilkin, there's a website called ProPublica, and I'd encourage people to go look it up. It's projects.propublica, propublica.org/nonprofits. And it's a database of these tax returns that are filed by all of the universities and a lot of other nonprofits. There's millions of them around the country. You can look up Concordia University, Inc., which is Concordia University, Wisconsin, Ann Arbor, and see their tax returns. You will see that from 2017 to the present, the revenues versus income has been negative $26.2 million. They've had losses in that measure every year since 2017. If you avoid the one-time asset sale, they sold about $4.6 million of real estate in Ann Arbor in 2022. So that is a worrying sign. That is not the end-all be-all, but if you look at Ann Arbor and you look at Mequon from 2009 to 2013, Mequon had positive income in that period before the merger of $34.5 million. And Ann Arbor had a loss of $10 million over that five-year period. This is just from the tax returns. The first 3 years after the merger, the numbers were positive of the combined campuses. But as I indicated, from 2017 forward, it's been negative. So again, all of these measures have, and I realize I'm getting in the weeds here a little bit, all of these measures have value. They look at different things, but you cannot discount any one of them. You have to look at the whole picture. And I think that is what people are not getting into with a quick reaction and say, oh, we have X number of undergraduate students, everything is okay. You have to look behind the curtain a little bit.
Who owns the property of Ann Arbor?
The property is owned by Concordia University, Wisconsin. That happened when the old freestanding Ann Arbor dissolved in 2014. It's subject to the reversionary rights of the Synod, and it's subject to the current indebtedness, whatever they may have on the property would have to be paid, but it is owned by CUW.
Why do we need to see CUW's financial analysis of this whole situation?
I think it would be helpful to see, to get a full explanation of all of these different factors. So Dr. Ferry did a podcast interview when he talked about the financials. He focused a lot on the financial statements, the audited financials. Dr. Ankerberg sent out, who is the current president, Dr. Ferry, of course, being the retired president after 24 years at SUW. Current president, Dr. Ankerberg, sent out an email in which he said, well, the financial statements don't tell the whole story. We need to look at some other factors. And I think it would be helpful for the CUW administration to share as much information as they think they can with their explanation of how these different things all tie together and how they've calculated their structural deficit.
You have written a response to much of this situation. What's the most common criticism that you've received from your columns, and how do you respond?
I don't know that I've received direct criticism on it. Perhaps that means no one has read it, or at least no one critical. I think the criticisms that would be made would be the same ones that have been shared by members of the Ann Arbor community and in the town halls that have been held and online, which is not for me because I'm not a part of the administration, but why weren't people told about this earlier? And is this in fact a crisis, or is this just a bean counter issue as someone has described it? It's always very tricky when you have a university that's in potential financial trouble. It's sort of a catch-22. If you come out too early, people will say, oh, you're spreading doom and gloom. This can be fixed. You're causing fear, uncertainty, and doubt. And you're going to deter people from coming to the university, deter donors, deter employees, and basically create a bad morale. If you wait too long to share it, and I was on the floor committee at the time of the Selma discussion at the 2019 convention, people say, well, why didn't you tell us earlier? If we had known, we could have had a fundraiser, we could have done this, we could have done that. Now you're just saying there's no option left to shut us down. Why didn't you come to us earlier? There's no right answer to that. I think a lot of times these issues come up when there is a leadership transition. As we saw at Concordia Bronxville, Dr. V.G. George retired. Dr. John Nunes came in as president. He saw some different things. At Portland, Dr. Charles Schlimpert had been president for many, many years. He retired. They brought in retired president Dr. Tom Reese from St. Paul to look at the situation. He determined it couldn't be fixed, and they announced a closure. Here we have Dr. Ankerberg coming in after a long tenure of Dr. Ferry. And again, this is not to point fingers at anybody. This is simply that when you have new eyes looking at a situation, sometimes things that are taken for granted are not taken for granted, and you get a new perspective. So people look around them at the university and they see everything operating. They say, well, hey, everything is operating. Why is there a problem? But the average student, the average faculty member, the average alumnus simply doesn't have access, not that I'm saying that I do either, have access to the kind of financial information or do the analysis on it to say, hey, there's some red flags, there's some warning signs here. We need to get out in front of this.
In your opinion, why do people, many who are reacting to this, seem surprised when it was exactly a financial, essentially a bailout that led to the merger of Concordia University, Wisconsin, and Concordia Ann Arbor? Why is anyone surprised that it is happening again?
This is a tough time for colleges and universities. Small private institutions, we've just seen in the last week, Valparaiso University, sometimes considered a Lutheran university, is cutting a lot of liberal arts programs and majors. They were in the news a couple of years ago when they wanted to sell some assets, some art, to fund certain capital projects, and they eliminated their law school. They've eliminated a number of programs there. So this is not unique to the Missouri Synod. The Ann Arbor situation, certainly it was established in 2012, 2013, that Ann Arbor was not viable as a freestanding institution in the way that it was then being operated. The hope was that Mequon was going to come in and grow the program, get some economies of scale. And they have added some profitable programs. A nursing school, I think, is doing pretty well from what I understand. And they believe they've got some physical and occupational therapy programs that will also be very successful. But undergraduate institutions lose money. That is the nature of them. Bricks and mortar is very expensive. Having faculty in person, in classrooms, is very expensive. And the schools that are able to do it successfully either have very large endowments, or in the case of the Concordias, they have graduate and online programs that generate revenue to subsidize the costs of the in-person undergraduate program. So people have seen many positive things that have happened in Ann Arbor over the last 10 years under Dr. Ferry, under the Mequon merger, and have said, oh, things look to be going in a good direction. One of the things that was not shared, apparently, was at the time of the merger, there was what I would call a stop-loss agreement, which said that there was supposed to be a four-year turnaround plan for the Ann Arbor campus, and it was supposed to reach a certain level of enrollment and avoid excessive losses. And if that did not happen, Mequon had the right to terminate the agreement, terminate the merger. Now, that was never communicated. I can't speak to why that was, but that indicates there was a recognition at the time of the merger that there had to be substantial changes, or the campus as it was constituted was going to be a negative financial drain on Concordia University, Wisconsin, and they wanted to avoid that and to make it as successful as they could make it.
You mentioned that Eric Ankerberg has followed up with an announcement of sorts. What's the latest information we have on the future of Concordia University Ann Arbor?
The board issued a video statement from Reverend John Berg on March 1st, which said basically that there will be continued operations at the Ann Arbor campus for the next academic year. There will also be significant cuts both at Mequon and Ann Arbor. The board is going to continue to deliberate options. That was the option that was approved by the board at its February 29th meeting, and basically more news to follow. So that has been perceived, I think, by many in Ann Arbor that everything is going to stay exactly the same. I don't know if that's true or not. I think they are going to make some structural changes. I think they have to based on the numbers that were shared. But for now, they are going to, at minimum, ensure that the students at Ann Arbor are able to complete their academic careers one way or the other. That's a requirement of the Federal Department of Education. They have to have what's called the teach-out plan. Now, I want to be clear, they have not announced they're doing a teach-out. They've not announced that they're closing the campus, and they've not announced what's going to happen. Pastor Berg simply stated that there will be operations in Ann Arbor next academic year, and it was not real specific as to what those are going to be. So certainly the board listened to what people had to say from the Ann Arbor community and did respond to that, but I'm not sure that it is a complete green light that everything is going to be exactly the same as it was this year for next year. But I think there's more to follow.
Mark Stern is our guest. We're talking about the financial viability of Concordia University Ann Arbor. Will this second failure be a cautionary tale for any future mergers among the Concordia University system? What does it mean to inwardly digest God's Word? Find out in Pastor Will Whedon's column in the latest Issues Etc. journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Dr. John Warwick Montgomery tells his story of finding confessional Lutheranism to be the most scripturally faithful theology. The free online Issues Etc. journal, issuesetc.org.
Teach, learn, connect at Louisville's Our Savior Lutheran Church and School. Our school is the only LCMS school in the greater Louisville metro area. It's a traditional Christian school with a rich history of academic excellence. From preschool through eighth grade, our teachers, staff, and church congregation connect with children across our city every day. Learn more online at Facebook or Twitter, or call 502-426-0864.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers, you're listening to Issues Etc.
If you continue in my word, you are truly my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free.
Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia University, Chicago.
Indeed, the quest for truth is at the core of a university's purpose. The liberal arts, illuminated by the revealed truths of Scripture, are powerful for equipping students for a life of self-governance. A disciple is one who follows the master. So what does it mean to follow Jesus? He said that it means to take up one's cross. The cross is thus the symbol of dying for others, of dying to self for the sake of serving others. And a life of service is a life well lived.
Truth, freedom, vocation, Concordia University, Chicago, cuchicago.edu.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the financial viability of Concordia University, Ann Arbor, Michigan. Mark Stern is our guest, an attorney in Chicago. He served on committees for university education for two conventions of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, former chairman of the Board of Regents at Concordia University Chicago, and author of a series of columns titled Concordia Ann Arbor, A Response. Folks, we're just a few weeks away from Easter Sunday. Why not share the joy of Christ's resurrection with your loved ones by sending them an Easter card from Ad Crucem? You can find an assortment of Easter cards there at adcrucem.com, adcrucem.com. Mark, I'm wondering whether or not this second failure is going to serve as a cautionary tale for any proposed future mergers among the Concordia universities.
Well, I'm not going to say whether it's turned out well or poorly. There are various metrics to measure that in terms of qualitative and quantitative. I would say financially, it has not gone as well as was hoped at the time of the merger. That is, of course, also the case at Concordia University, Wisconsin. They've had a reduction in enrollment, which has happened to higher ed across the country because of a dearth of children being born, what's called the demographic cliff. So there are fewer students enrolling, and that is affecting secular colleges, private colleges, everybody around the country. In terms of a merger, I would look at it as if you have two congregations that want to merge and they're both in serious financial straits, putting them together and saying, we're going to keep our two buildings, we're going to keep everything pretty much the way it is, but we're just going to share a little bit, probably is not going to be a successful strategy. If you have two viable congregations that are looking down the road and saying, hey, we seem to be seeing some shrinkage, can we get together? Can we do something new? Can we perhaps consolidate? That may be a more successful path. I think that there's always a desire, and this is true for me, for anybody. We look at human institutions. We say, hey, you know, I went to school here. I graduated here. I want to see this continue just the way it is. That promise is not given to an individual university or, frankly, an individual congregation. It's given to the church. The church will not perish, but an individual building may or may not continue to operate. And that is the cautionary tale here. You have to be proactive in terms of getting together rather than waiting until the last minute when resources have been spent that could be used to facilitate a merger. And you have to recognize that some changes may need to occur, maybe not to the mission, but maybe to the way in which the services are being delivered, maybe to the physical plant, things of that nature.
I am of the opinion, Mark, and I think others share it, and I am happy to be corrected, that at this point in our history, especially given the projected demographics of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, what we're operating now as a Concordia University system is, if only financially, unsustainable. What's your thought on that?
When we started this endeavor, Concordia, what is now Concordia University of Chicago, was the first Concordia to be founded in 1864, barring the seminaries. 100 years ago, there were only four four-year degree granting institutions. You had the two seminaries, you had Seward, and you had River Forest. The Synod had a network of junior colleges at Portland, at Bronxville, at ultimately at Ann Arbor, in Milwaukee, other places, some that we don't have anymore, such as Oakland, California, Conover, North Carolina, St. John's, Winfield, Kansas is a prominent one. Those were feeder schools. Some of those teachers came out after 2 years and went and started teaching in the classroom of parochial schools. Some people transferred to four-year schools. Some people went on to the senior college at Fort Wayne and then went to the two seminaries. Around the late 1960s and throughout the 1970s, we had a vast expansion of the university places. They went from small colleges to universities. They went from two-year to four-year. Ann Arbor was one of them. So we had a vast growth in the size and scope of the Concordias at a time when we had reached maximum size of the Synod and had begun a numerical decline. So today we have probably 10 times as many places in the university as we had, and we do not have nearly the number of Missouri Synod students that we had. So we have a largely secular student population. I mean, when I say secular, some are Christian, some are devout Christians, some are nominally Christian, some are not Christian at all. and we don't have the number of Lutheran faculty to staff these. So this is a challenge that we face. Can we sustain a university system of this size? Some people will say, yes, this is a mission outreach opportunity. And of course, it can be if you avow that that is what you're going to do when you put in your catalog, hey, come here. We will try to teach you the truth of our faith. We're not going to discriminate against you, but we hope that you'll learn that truth. And our express purpose is to share that faith with you. I'm not sure how much the Concordias actually do that versus simply say something like, well, we are a Christ-centered college and we do nice things, but are we expressly saying we're doing evangelism? So there is an argument to be made. Should we be smaller and more focused on Lutherans, or is this in fact an outreach opportunity? And that's the question that has to be answered by each school. What can they do? And the Lutheran identity and mission statements that are approved at the last convention is an effort to refocus the Concordias and say, yes, we want to share the truth and purity of God's word and our wonderful Lutheran doctrine with the students and faculty that come to us. And that's what the Concordia system is trying to do today. But because there are so many secular and governmental regulations in higher education, it becomes increasingly difficult to do that. And we will find out in the coming years whether it is possible to continue in the manner that we have been doing.
Mark Stern is an attorney in Chicago. He has served on committees for university education for two LCMS conventions, former chairman of the Board of Regents at Concordia University Chicago, and author of a series of columns titled Concordia Ann Arbor, A Response. You'll find a link to these columns on the Talk On Demand archives page at issuesetc.org. Mark, thank you.
Thank you.
We will talk about young women, careers, marriage, and family with Suzanne Venker, author of the new book, How to Build a Better Life, A New Roadmap for Women Who Want to Prioritize Love and Family, right after this.
You can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by purchasing a cell phone case from Crossway, crossweh.com/LPR. You'll find cell phone cases for Issues Etc., Lutheran Public Radio, The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, and Luther's Seal with the Reformation Solas, crossweh.com/LPR. A percentage of your purchase will support Issues Etc., crossweh.com/LPR.
What can we learn from Old Testament prophet Samuel on how to endure through tumultuous times? Find out in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March, Unfailing, God's Assurance for Times of Change. This book is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040. Or learn more about Unfailing at issuesetc.org. Unfailing, God's Assurance for Times of Change, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March.
The characteristic mark of hope is that it always looks into the future, so says Hermann Zassa in the March issue of the Lutheran Witness, which is all about hope and overcoming the quiet despair with which we are so in danger of being overcome in these days. To find out more about hope, what Christian hope looks like, and what it means to be a hopeful community, pick up your copy of the March issue of the Lutheran Witness. Visit cph.org/witness or witness.lcms.org. The Lutheran Witness, helping you interpret the world from a Lutheran perspective.
Luther Academy provides additional theological education for our mission partners around the world, specifically pastors who are asking for additional education but do not have the necessary resources in their own church bodies. By donating to Luther Academy today, you will be supplying food, housing, books, professors, and travel for Lutheran pastors who attend our conferences. To learn more about Luther Academy and how you can donate today, visit lutheracademy.com. LutherAcademy.com.
Luther had Wartburg. We have Collinsville. You're listening to Issues Etc.
How can we agree? This is Ken Ham, and our ministry has produced the popular Answers VBS for churches. Yesterday, we saw that I agree with evolutionist Richard Dawkins on a matter of biology. How can a creationist and an evolutionist agree on anything? Well, there's a big difference between observational and historical science. With observational science, we do repeatable experiments and develop technology. With historical science, we're asking questions about the past, which can't be directly tested or observed, but must be interpreted based on your beliefs about the past. Dawkins and I will agree on lots of things involving observational science, but where we'll disagree? Well, when it comes to historical science, in other words, beliefs about the past.
Discover more about the true nature of science and how science confirms the Bible when you visit our website at answersradio.com.